This is a CBC podcast. Know someone who's learning English as an additional language? Be sure to tell them about CBC Manitoba's weekly Learning English podcast. They can download language lessons and learn more about life in Manitoba at cbc.ca/podcasting.
From the Minnedosa Community Conference Center in Minnedosa, Manitoba, it's the Vinyl Cafe with Stuart McLean.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It's so nice to be back in Minnedosa. It has been 11 years since we were here, and I remember it as clearly as I remember yesterday, which is to say it's all a little foggy. It was the autumn of 1998, the beginning of our first full season on the radio. Vinyl Cafe was just getting going, and we were just beginning these cross-country tours. These days when we record a show like this, we travel around on a bus, a tour bus that comes complete with a bus driver. We could have 10 or 15 people on that bus these days. But in the fall of 1998, what we had was a rented minivan, and there were just three of us in it, me, pianist John Sheard, and guitar player Chris Whiteley. We shared the driving. We did a lot of shows in a lot of small towns in those days, and for some reason we did a lot of them, the majority of them, right here in Manitoba. Somehow when we started this thing, we started on the Manitoba circuit. And that autumn, the autumn of 1998, when we played here in Minnedosa, we also played in Neepawa and Boisevain and Gladstone and Carmen and Verdon and Deloraine. All the hot spots. I remember the night just down the road in Neepawa that I met Larry Evans. Larry ran the Evans bowling lanes in Neepawa, and after our concert at the Roxy Theater, Larry introduced himself and invited me to meet him at the bowling lanes the next morning. He thought I'd be interested in reading some of the graffiti the pin boys had scrawled on the walls over the years. Sounds strange, but he was absolutely right. I met him the next morning, and Larry said, "You know, if you could stay an extra day, you could go for a drive on the prairie with Nestor." Nestor, it turned out, lived on the edge of Neepawa, out where the prairie licks up against the homes, and of a Saturday evening, when the moon was full, it was Nestor's habit to drive his pickup off the road and onto the grasslands and put it into reverse and take his hands off the steering wheel and sit in the cab and let his truck take him wherever it wanted to under the stars. Now, how long, I asked, how long would this take? "Oh," said Larry, thinking for a moment, "about the time it takes Nestor to drink a case of beer." Reason I wasn't able to stay in Neepawa and roam across the prairie with Nestor, the reversing farmer, was we were scheduled to play at the Winchester Theater in Deloraine that night, and we had to get in our minivan and be on our way. In Deloraine, my motel room came equipped with a wall-mounted propane heater. Cheap, efficient, and explosive. Took one look at it and searched my room for extra blankets. That was the same motel room that had a sign stuck on the wall behind the bathroom that read, "Please, no cleaning birds in rooms." Took me a while to figure out what they meant. There are so many things wrong with that sign. We visited the Museum of the Titanic in Portage la Prairie. Who knew? We stayed at a bed and breakfast in a small town whose name I'm going to forget. It was run by a man who was an artist of sorts, and he had hung some of his prints around and about. Trying to be polite, I admired one on my way to bed. "You like that one?" he said. It was a picture of a grain elevator. About 6 months later, I received a package at my home. When I opened it, I was surprised to find the print of the grain elevator. I was even more surprised to find an invoice. I sent him the money. It was less than $100, and I still have the picture. And it makes me smile every time I look at it. All these things that we saw, all these things we did, all these memories. And then we came here to Minnedosa, right here to the Minnedosa Community Conference Center. We arrived in the early afternoon, and I remember John Sheard looking around this very stage and then looking at me and saying in a very small voice, there's no piano. Now, he may have sounded small and restrained, but if you know John like I know John, what you heard was panic. Someone overheard him, and they said, "Don't worry, we're getting you a piano. You guys go for dinner." So we went over to the Sun's Chinese Food for a pre-show supper. What had happened was a group of guys from the Arts Committee had gone over to the Tanner's Crossing Elementary School and wrestled the school's upright piano into the back of Bob Connor's pickup truck. And on the way back over here, they got stuck at the rail crossing behind an eastbound freight. "We're raising money to buy a proper piano," said Bob Connors as they stood around the upright they had brought over. "A piano that we can keep right here." "I'll contribute," said John Sheard. And he handed them $50 on the spot. And later that night, in the middle of the show, not wanting to be outdone, I heard myself making a commitment too. From now on, I announced, we are going to pass the bucket at all our concerts. We're going to collect money at all our shows for your piano. And we did that for about a year. At every Vinyl Cafe concert for the next year, we passed a bucket and invited people to throw in their change. "Oh, only coins," we said, because we wanted it to be the coming together of the many rather than the coming together of the few. We only did this in towns that looked like they had everything they needed. But one night in Ottawa, we raised over $1,300. My idea was, them that's got should give. We raised almost $5,000 in coins, and we presented it to Bob Connors in a bar in a strip mall in Brandon one night a year later. It was only a small part of the money that you raised to buy the piano that is on stage today. But I have to tell you, I was filled with big feelings when I saw the plaque thanking donors in the hallway outside. John's name is there, and so is mine. And I didn't expect that, but what got me, it listed donors alphabetically, and at the top of the list it reads, "Thanks to the audiences of the Vinyl Cafe on CBC Radio," and I thought I should let everyone know that. Years have gone by since then, and Bob Connors, God bless him, has passed on, and your new piano is on stage, and I understand it's worked out well. I've been told that, but we haven't been back to see it for ourselves, and I thought it was about time that we changed that, so that's why we are here today, and that's why I brought with me the people who were here with me 10 years ago who got this story started. For today's show, we have assembled the same cast who were here on this stage 10 years ago. Chris Whiteley is here on the guitar, horn, and vocal. Dennis Pendrith is here on bass. And John Sheard is going to play the piano that he helped buy. And he's going to do that right now for the first time. Ladies and gentlemen, John Sheard. So you should introduce this. What are you going to play?
Well, I wanted to play something about Minnedosa. So I thought, well, I'll just play the song about Minnedosa. And then I asked around and I got on the net and I said, you know what, there is no song about Minnedosa, at least not that I know of. And I asked around. There was a guy there, sound check yesterday. I said, is there a song about Minnedosa? He said, nope. I said, have you lived here a long time? 40 years. Okay, so I wrote a song about Minnedosa.
He wrote a song about Minnedosa. Yeah.
It's got everything. It's got low comedy. It's got, you know, drama, tragedy, and a surprise ending.
And I think they're going to recognize a surprise ending, right?
I think they will, yeah.
And what's it called?
It's called Minnedosa, Coming Home to You.
John Sheard, ladies and gentlemen. No place I'd rather be. I got a gal there, her name is Rosa. She thinks the world of me. Gone to Minnedosa. My rambling days are through. Every day I'm getting closer to my darling little Rosa. Minnedosa, coming home to you. Play it, Johnny. A happy little hoser on my prairie ponderosa, Minnedosa. I'm coming home to you. So leave the porch light on for me. Oh, yeah. John Sheard, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
So, John, was the... what do you think? Was it worth it? The piano?
It's a very good piano. It's a great piano. It's very versatile. It's got, you know, all the big and bombastic when you want that, and dark and moody when you want that. So all those things. Just like you, actually.
Yeah. So, well, which one's better? Which part... of the two, if you had to choose?
Well, I like everything from the piano because I got to play all styles all the time in my business.
You can play all styles all the time?
Yeah. I mean, I could take a song, play any song, and play it in 10 different styles. Without
any song?
Pretty well, yeah.
You could take any song and play it in any different styles? 10?
10 different styles? Yeah, I'd
say. Should we put them to the test?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, do you want to choose a song? I'll choose the song. How about the Vinyl Cafe theme? Could you do
Vinyl
that?
Vinyl Cafe theme. Well, I could play the Vinyl Cafe theme.
Yeah, but could you do it now? You're going to do it in 10 different styles, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay, smart guy. We'll start with classical. Do it like Anton QWERTY.
Like Anton QWERTY. Okay. Yeah. Well, with apologies to the maestro, he'd probably do it in sort of maybe a little dark, a little Russian sort of thing, maybe like... Something like that.
Not bad. So that's Anton QWERTY. Let's see you do country then. Country style.
Well, country is sort of, that'd be all about Floyd Kramer, the father of country piano, and he would do it like this.
Very good. That's very good. Floyd Kramer. What is it about that that makes me know that's Floyd?
Well, Floyd always does the little sort of fancy stuff. Sort of pretty boy Floyd, we call him. All up at the top. And his big song was Last Dance, and that's all it is.
Okay, back to the theme, my friend. You've done it. You've done it classical. You've done it country. Do it rock and roll.
Rock and roll. Well, that's Jerry Lee Lewis. That's the only guy. So let's see. He'd be sort of like this.
Three, and I assume that's the Bright and the Bombastic.
That's the Bright and Bombastic.
What's the Dark and the Moody then?
Well,
you're talking about Dark and Moody.
Yeah, Dark and Moody. Well, Dark and Moody is sort of like Miles Davis, I guess, and put it in a sort of a minor key, like if anybody knows Miles.
Well, now, I can hear that's Dark and Moody, but how... What makes that dark? Can you put that into words for me?
Here's
what
the makes original. It's sort of happy sounding, major and happy. And Miles is all minor.
What about Oscar? How would Oscar Peterson do?
Oh, Oscar's a little faster. He's a little more swing to him.
That's five there. You got five. You did country, classical, rock, two jazzes.
Yeah.
Can you keep going? It's only five. You said you could do 10.
Well, okay, how about, say, to keep on a Canadian thing, how about Frank Mills? And I'll have to do it with the Frank Mills sort of grin, the audience. Sort of like Groucho Marx, yeah. Or maybe Scott Joplin. Scott Joplin, you have to slow him down a bit and... Maybe a couple more sort of blue chords. That's sort of
right
Scott
there.
Joplin. And to stay on an even more Canadian theme, the king of Canadian polkas, Walter Ostenek, might be something like that. Something like that. That's Oscar.
You just modulated.
Yeah, Walter after a couple of, Oktoberfests. Could even do it like Glenn Gould, sort of my, with apologies to Glenn. Like a Mozart thing. Sort of, let me think about this for 1 second here.
And that is 9, and I think you are running out of styles, my friend.
That's
I think
9.
You're tapped out.
Well, we haven't done the blues yet.
Chairs. That was really great. That was very good. You win. You got them 10. But if we're going to play the blues, let's do the blues for real. Let's get Chris Whiteley out here to sing a song, and we're going to get Chris to come out and do the same song he did 10 years ago on the show. Chris Whiteley, ladies and gentlemen, and Dennis Penrith joining him on the bass.
Child coming, gonna be a son of a gun, gonna make pretty women all jump and shout, and then the world's gonna know what it's all about. And you know I'm here. Well, everybody knows I'm. Seventh hour on the seventh day of the seventh month, the seven doctors say he was born for good luck, and that you'll see. Well, I got $700, baby, don't you mess with me, you know I'm here. Well, everybody knows I'm here. Well, I'm your hoochie coochie man. Got my mojo working, but it just don't work on you. I got my mojo working, but it just don't work on you. I wanna love you so bad that I don't know what to do. I'm going back to Minnesota. Minnedosa, gonna get me a mojo hand. I'm going back to Minnedosa, gonna get me a mojo hand. I wanna have all you women under my command. I got my mojo working. I got my mojo working. I got my mojo working. Yeah, I got my mojo working. I got my mojo working, but it just don't work on you. I got my mojo working.
I got my mojo working,
but it just don't work on you.
Chris Whiteley. Chris Whiteley. Time now for the Vinyl Cafe Story Exchange. Well, you know how this part works. This is the part of the show where you send us your stories. They have to be true stories, and they have to be short, but after that, they don't have to be anything at all. After that, it's up to you. We'll read everything you send us, and we'll read some of our favorites here on the radio show. And if we read yours on the radio, we'll send you a copy of our latest book, Secrets from the Vinyl Cafe. Today's letter comes to us from Brenda Baltensperger of Calgary, Alberta. Dear Stuart, writes Brenda, every time I hear Over the Rainbow, it brings tears to my eyes, and for a very good reason. 1981 was a bad year. My husband died, and a few months later, I almost lost my eldest son, Nick. Nick was a music student at Mohawk College in Hamilton at the time. He'd been born with a medical condition that we became aware of when he was 7. And because this condition limited him physically, he quickly fell in love with music. Music was his life. A few months after his father's death, Nick became ill and went into hospital. The neurosurgeon told me that Nick needed surgery, but that the risk was high and that even if he survived, he could be completely or partially paralyzed. Nick's brother and I sat through the 6.5-hour surgery in the hospital waiting room. Finally, we were told that Nick had come through okay, but that we would have to wait and see regarding his mobility. Day later, Nick slid into a coma. He'd had a stroke. He did recover and was sent for physiotherapy, but the prognosis was bad. He was told that he most likely wouldn't walk again, and he'd never play the piano. Nick went into a deep depression and refused to talk to his music teacher or any of his friends from Mohawk College. He wouldn't even listen to music. His brother and I tried to encourage him. We told him he had to believe in himself. We told him that anything was possible. By the time 6 months had passed, Nick was able to talk and walk himself around the hospital in a wheelchair. One Sunday, I arrived at the ward for a visit, and I found Nick wasn't there. I was desperately worried until one of the other patients said that he'd gone down to the common room. I hurried down there and found Nick sitting at the piano. He was trying to play Over the Rainbow. His fingers were collapsing on the keyboard, and tears were streaming down his face. This was the turning point for him. After another 6 months of therapy, Nick came out of hospital and returned to complete his graduation at Mohawk College. At the graduation concert, Nick walked onto the stage, threw down his canes, limped to the piano, and played a concerto that he had written. He received a standing ovation. It was the proudest day of my life. Nick had found his rainbow. That story came to us from Brenda Baltensperger of Calgary, Alberta. This is the Vinyl Cafe Orchestra. It was John Sheard on the piano, Dennis Pendrith on bass, and Chris Whiteley on horn, and that was beautiful. Yeah. We're going to get Chris to do another one right now, and I think maybe you should just introduce it, Chris.
Thank you, Stuart. Well, I'd like to do a song right now that I think might be appropriate after the story exchange we just had. It's a song I wrote a few years back, and... when I wrote this song, I was kind of thinking about the things that my parents had taught me and how they raised me, and I was thinking of some of the ideas I wanted to pass along to my own kids. And when I heard that story about Nick and saw the kind of perseverance that it took to accomplish what he did, I think the words of this song go very well along with that. And it's one called Take Your Time and Do It Right. Take your time and do it right. Leave yourself some room to fall. Sometimes you've got to give it up. If you wanna have it all, now when I was just a tadpole learning how to swim, looking for some trouble just to get myself in, well, my mama and my daddy, they tried to bring me up right. They said, think for yourself, son. Do your best all the time. And take your time and do it right. Leave yourself some room to fall. Sometimes you've got to give it up. If you wanna have it all, now I've watched the little children while they play their silly games. When there's something that they want, you know they try and try again. I watched them fall so many times right against the ground, and I've watched them get back up again every time that they fall down. And take your time and do it right. Leave yourself some room to fall. Sometimes you got to give it up. Well, if you wanna have it all, let's hear John now. Sometimes you got to give it up. Yeah, if you wanna have it all. Yeah, sometimes you got to give it up. If you wanna have it all.
Chris Whiteley. People often ask me about Dave and Morley. Mostly when they do, they want to know about their life beyond the radio show. I always say I think they have a pretty solid relationship, a good working arrangement. Like most couples, they've struggled from time to time over various things, like, say, household chores. Morley used to do the lion's share, but she laid down the law when she went back to work full time. And Dave, God bless him, stepped up to the plate. These days, like most liberated men, he almost does his full share. Does the weekly grocery shop, for instance. He volunteered for groceries mostly to avoid scrubbing toilets. Figured shopping for food would be, if not exciting, at least fun. And over the years, he has more or less kept it that way. He'll often go to a store where he has never been before just for fun, or buy stuff he's never bought, unfamiliar cereals, weird cuts of weird meat, little strategies to keep things interesting. One of the best ever was the time he hijacked the grocery cart. You could say stole, I suppose. Morley did. But he paid for everything, so it wasn't technically stealing. One night, he just didn't feel like shopping. So he wandered into a store, chose a cart that looked close enough to one he might have filled himself. Waited for the guy who filled it to turn his back. And when he did, Dave whisked that cart to the cash, paid for the groceries. He was in and out in under 10 minutes flat. Fastest grocery shop of his life. That was fun. Mostly it stays interesting because each time still feels like the first time to Dave. He still reads every label, goes up and down every aisle. When Dave goes grocery shopping, it can take hours. And that drives Morley batty. They do a lot of things well together, most things actually, but grocery shopping isn't one of them. So when Morley dropped Dave at the grocery store one day, and she said she was going to the hairdresser and that she'd be back in an hour, no more than an hour, and an hour was plenty of time for Dave to get what he needed, more than enough really, and that she'd meet him in the parking lot in 1 hour, no more than that, and please don't take any longer than that, Dave said, don't worry. And he meant it. Watched her drive away. And then with his heart full of love and good intentions, he headed into the store to fetch himself a shopping cart. Now, an hour wasn't a lot of time for Dave, but he was confident if he applied himself, he could do it. And then when he went to pull his grocery cart out of the train of grocery carts by the door of that store, he found it locked to the cart in front. Now, that had never happened to him before. Suddenly, he needed a quarter to unlock a cart. Well, he didn't have a quarter. He had a credit card and a debit card. But to get a shopping card, he was going to have to go into the store and find a cash machine and withdraw $20 and then find somebody in the store to change it for him. Well, glanced at his watch nervously, that could easily take an extra 10 minutes. And that was 10 minutes Dave didn't have. Was while he was standing there staring at the locked carts, wondering what he should do, that he noticed the electric scooters. There were two of them, parked by the supermarket doors where they had been parked for years, part of the landscape, like the blue steam cleaners you could rent, or the bulletin board where you could post a note. There was a sign that explained the carts were there for the convenience of anyone who needed them. The sign was clear about this, for the convenience of our customers. Now, how great would that be, to be electric cart guy zooming down the aisles in your free scooter, instead of a schlep-around guy with a 25-cent push cart? Besides, who was it going to hurt? The store was pretty empty, and there were two carts. There'd still be one left if anyone really needed it. Dave glanced at his watch. He had already lost 7 minutes. So he made a fast tour of the store, checking up and down every aisle, making absolutely sure that there was no one there who knew him. And when he was sure that the coast was clear, he climbed onto the scooter by the door, he turned the key, he pressed the accelerator, and pretty soon he was cruising down the aisles gleefully, proud of the way that he had solved his problem. proud of how efficiently he was drifting from one side of the aisles to the other, plucking cans off the shelves without even slowing down. And look, there was a lady at the end of the very aisle he was going down who was giving away free samples, his very favorite thing. This was his lucky day. He waved at the lady as he got closer, and then he beeped his horn. He didn't even know he had a horn. Imagine that. How great was that? He waved and he beeped, and she looked up and she smiled, and he slid to a stop in front of her little stand, and she handed him a sausage on a cracker with some melted goat's cheese. He ate the cracker, and it was delicious. And he gave her his most winsome grin, and she handed him another cracker, and then he tooted his horn and he drove off. Horn was a nice addition. Dave liked his horn. And so for the next half hour, Dave cruised around the store, loading up his cart and tooting at the other shoppers. Each time he passed Sausage Lady, he gave her another little toot. And she gave him another little sausage, although with diminishing enthusiasm. Soon he was ready to cash out. He glanced at his watch. Couldn't believe it. Things had gone so well. He had made it to the end of the line. He had time on his hands. There he was with the empty cereal aisle stretched out long and empty before him, and he had time to spare. So would you be surprised when I told you he looked around and he revved the motor of his little scooter and he muttered, "Let's see what this little baby can do." And he stopped on the accelerator. You might be surprised by how much pep one of those little babies have. Though not nearly as surprised as Dave was when he got near the end of the aisle and he lifted his foot from the accelerator and it didn't slow down. The throttle was jammed. Dave stomped on the brake of that little cart with terror coursing through his body, but nothing was happening. And he was pretty close to the end of the aisle. He was coming up on Sausage Lady again. Who looked up and frowned when she saw him bearing down on her that fast. Frankly, she was getting tired of his little games, though she wasn't surprised. She had been trained to accommodate people like him. It was obvious from the first time she saw him that he had special needs. So she pumped her fist in the air, and she picked up a sausage, and she flipped it to Dave. Dave grabbed it as he flew by her, shoved it in his mouth. And then he wrenched his scooter hard to the right, and he headed back down a familiar aisle, down past the canned soups and juices, not at all sure what he should do. Could have jumped off, of course. Could have steered himself into a quiet section of the store and bailed, but then there would have been a rogue scooter wheeling down the aisles, knocking people over, bumping into shelves, and they had cameras in stores like that. They'd catch him on the camera, and Sausage Lady would step up and identify him, which, all things considered, might have been the best thing to do, because instead of jumping off, Dave glanced at his watch again, and in the brief moment that he wasn't paying complete attention, he bumped the guy filling the lobster tank. More a nick than a bump, but enough of a nick that Dave was now flying through the store with a lobster in his lap. And that lobster was doing exactly what you or I would do under the circumstances. Looking for something to grab onto. Dave doesn't remember much after that. Morley does. How could she forget? Morley had just pulled into the parking lot when the front doors of that grocery store burst open and the electric scooter came flying out. Dave holding on for dear life, a link of sausages wrapped around his neck. He hit a speed bump. He got air. When he came to, there was a crowd of people pressing round him. Sound of a faraway siren and a sausage lady holding the lobster in one hand and pointing at Morley with the other. "What were you expecting?" she said sternly, "leaving a poor man like him all alone without supervision." They haven't talked about groceries since. Though Dave did help with the laundry last week and cleaned the toilets, upstairs and down, which was his way of edging towards an apology. Thank you. We're gonna get Chris Whiteley up here to do one last song now.
You got to give a little and take a little and let your poor heart break a little. That's the story of, that's the glory of love. Well, you got to sigh a little and cry a little. Let those clouds roll by a little. That is the story of, yeah, that's the glory of love. Now, as long as there's the two of us, we've got this world and all its charm. But when this world gets through with us, we've still got each other's arms. You're gonna win a little. Yeah, you'll lose a little. Sometimes you'll even get the blues a little. But that's the story of, that's the glory of love.
Well, I want to take a moment to thank everyone here on stage with me today. John Sheard on the piano, Dennis Pendrith on bass, and Chris Whiteley singing and playing the horn. Thanks also to Ron Skinner, Bill Herault, Brad Scrutton, too, for all the technical assistance. David Amers, the founding producer of the Vinyl Cafe. Louise Curtis is the production assistant. Julie Penner is the music producer. Meg Masters is the long-suffering story editor. The Vinyl Cafe is produced by Jess Milton. I'm Stuart McLean in Minnedosa, Manitoba. Yeah. So long for now!
Yeah, you're going to win a little and lose a little. I said you're going to get the blues a little. That is the story of, and that's the glory of love.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.